But is there a document or something?
Okay, if you can get online, can you email?
We're good, Bill.
You ready?
You get online here, I don't.
Okay, we'll call the meeting of Monday, special meeting of the planning commission for Monday, October 21st, 2015, in order. Kim, could you please call the roll?
Sure. Chairman Christensen?
Present.
Commissioner Demarest?
Here.
Commissioner Dirksen?
Here.
Commissioner Jensen?
Here.
Commissioner Rodlin?
Here.
Commissioner Sherwood?
Here.
Commissioner Tuttle?
Here.
Thank you, Kim. This is a time when we open the meeting to comments from our citizens. We do ask that you keep your comments to items that are not on tonight's agenda, and keep them to 5 minutes or less. But I don't think we have that problem. If somebody here would like to make a comment that is not on tonight's agenda.
So.
What I'm going to do, since I know you're from the school.
Yeah.
I'm going to open up discussion when we talk about the mitigation part.
Okay.
And so that we can have some discussion on that. I did ask some of the members of the planning commission, and they didn't seem to have a problem with that. So we can have some comments made at that time.
Okay.
If that's okay.
That's perfect.
All right, good. All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What's your email?
Okay, and then approval of minutes. Did we get minutes?
No, actually we did not get those complete. They're close but not complete. But definitely at our next meeting, we'll get caught up.
Okay. All right. No problem. Okay, and then the next item is workshops. Do you want to take these in order, Paul, as we see them here, or?
Actually, let me grab one thing.
Include my own agenda.
The schools.
Grab a phone.
It includes, it says public hearing, I don't need to mention it.
There's a public hearing?
No.
No.
It's listed.
Oh, it's not on.
In order would be fine.
In order would be fine? Okay. All right. Okay, the first item in the workshop is CPA 2011-01 East Monroe Economic Development Group. Paul, you want to take that?
Yes. This is a continuing workshop for all the comp plan amendments. I have a couple of. I brought the same birthday from last week to do with East Monroe and the schools, and I do have a couple of slides I want to touch on before we start discussion of East Monroe in terms of the schedule and some of the criteria the criteria that we talk about or consider when we're reviewing these comp plan amendments together as a whole. But the couple of additions here, or at least one addition, there is an error in your cover sheet in the schedule that still carried the October 28th public hearing date. I think it was in the cover sheet for East Monroe. Mm-hmm. But that is incorrect, and it is scheduled for November 11th. We are able to hold it on that day, just simply on the basis that we call it a special meeting, not a regular meeting. And that, I'm afraid we had to do that to accommodate the schedule between now and the end of the year. So I just wanted to point that out. And there was an appeal submitted this past Friday on the final EIS from the Lowell Anderson and Jeff Rogers. They have 12 points of contention, I'd say, or basing their appeal on 12 points. It involves things like how the no action alternative was considered, in regards to agricultural land, a couple of points on the economic viability of the project, which is really not germane, but nonetheless it's included in the appeal. The DOT information, flooding, a few others. And we are, this meeting had missed, and we've been scrambling on this Friday and today. The next steps for this are to, there likely is going to be a pre-hearing conference with the appellant. The public hearing is scheduled for November 7th, and that could potentially change just a bit. But we're, it's in the hands of the hearing examiner to either approve and schedule a pre-hearing conference or simply deny having such a conference. It was requested by the applicants, appellants. So within the next couple of weeks, staff will be preparing a response and a staff report, documentation, exhibits for the hearing coming up in, as scheduled, what, about 3 weeks? 2 weeks. November 7th. That may or may not change the action dates on the calendar. Legally, the council can take action on the first reading without the appeal being completely processed, since it is not a final action. But they will not, and I don't believe they can. They can, but I think they will not take final action on the second reading unless that appeal process is complete, which may potentially lead to a special meeting sometime later in December. Or the appeal may be upheld. We don't know. But I'm just going to say, I believe we've been going through this appeal today, and I believe we can respond pretty effectively to each of them. But that's going to be up to the hearing examiner.
Okay. Commissioner Dumas?
The appeal, there's a what period for reconsideration after the decision's rendered?
There is. We will likely have a pre-hearing conference and then the actual hearing, public hearing before the hearing examiner. And then we have scheduled him for about 2 weeks to render a decision. It may come sooner. But after he renders that decision, there is a 10-day reconsideration period. He can be requested to reconsider his decision by the appellant, which carries it, you know, into December.
Too. And then there's an appeal period after the reconsideration?
No, that's the end. After that, the only appeal left is an appeal of both the FEIS coupled with the comprehensive plan amendment, and that would have to come after final action on the board here. You see a council action on the 10th and the 17th, and on that schedule, the judicial period begins so many days after the ordinance is published. So the 60-day period for that final appeal to the Growth Management Hearings Board starts on, in this case, December 23rd. And that appeal would be due to be filed by February 21st.
Okay, so what I'm hearing then is the public hearing that we're having on the 11th would still include the East Monroe.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Right.
Yes. Right. The only event that would pull East Monroe off of the review process is if the hearing examiner finds in favor of the appellant. Then there'll be no further action until that is resolved, which could take some time. And it would likely not be passed in this cycle.
Okay.
That's speculation. Okay.
Okay.
I know that the question came up last week. Now that we're having a couple of workshops considering all three amendments together, East Monroe, the text amendments, and the school mitigation fees. We'll be bringing findings and conclusions for each of these, like we have in the past on past amendments. But these are the criteria that we use to judge whether it is, you know, whether it is acceptable or whether we're recommending approval. And it's a fairly long list, but it's some fairly straightforward, you know, public effects and certainly consistency with the comp plan, and that is consistency with the comp plan as it's being proposed in its revised form, not the existing. You know, there's the East Monroe is kind of the odd amendment out here in terms of it is really a development related amendment as opposed to text amendments for the schools and the elements, but there is some language in the land use element that one could consider renders the East Monroe amendment consistent with the comp plan, at least in some ways. You can find reasons either way, but consistency with the comp plan, with GMA and so forth, and with the somewhere here, I believe should also be the municipal code, and considering the cumulative effects. These three amendments together may have some synergy or they may be totally unrelated, but we have to consider what those cumulative effects could be. And some other criteria, generally speaking, that it meets city needs, environmental growth projections, and so forth, and that it meets, I think this is an important one, does it meet the intent of the comp plan, which goes right back to consistency, and certainly the CEPA process, particularly in the case of East Monroe. And we're in the midst of both of those, really all three of those, with the Commerce Department in the final stages of the CEPA process for those. So that's what we're going to be coming back with. Probably at the public hearing on the 11th, and then with these criteria, and then for action on the 25th, or this commission's pleasure, action on November 11th, but we schedule it for the 25th. Okay. So the first one, if there's anything we need to revisit on East Monroe.
Commissioners,
anything specific? I'm sorry.
You need to Commissioner Tall?
Thank you. I just have a question about that criteria from this slide before. All of this was looked at before the rezone was docketed. Is that right or no? Because I thought that all this criteria had to be met before it could go on the docket last year.
I believe it's not all of these, but a shorter list that's used to evaluate.
I thought it was longer, actually. I thought there were seven points that we had to look at before it was put on the docket. But I didn't remember if these are all exactly them or not. So are these are criteria that we're supposed to be looking at?
Yes. Well, staff will bring you a report that staff has looked at in terms of these criteria, okay. Each one. And
so this is not the same criteria that was looked at before it was put on the docket?
I have to check, to be sure.
Do any of you guys remember? Because you had to make a recommendation on whether or not it would be docketed in the first place.
Right.
And I know there was criteria. I just want to know if this has already been gone over, or if...
I think the standard was less. The standard for docketing is less than the standard for amendment.
And it doesn't go into the same depth, you know, like in terms of an East Monroe amendment, a standalone citizen-initiated amendment, the application would normally include, if it's not consistent with the comp plan, it would have to include some language changes to the comp plan to, you know, the applicant's side at least, make it consistent. But I think it's basically the same criteria, but I'm not sure that it's quite exactly the same order or level of detail.
Thank you.
But I'll bring back the docket criteria.
That would be great. Thank you.
Commissioner Demarest?
Thank you. All that said, when this commission heard this about a year ago and formed a recommendation to council on the comp plan amendment at the time, all these issues were looked at. Were they not? And discussed.
Yeah, I believe so.
Because that was, we're effectively doing the same process now as we went through a year and some months ago, last time around.
Yeah. The docketing phase really asks the question, is this worthy of considering and taking on further for formal review and action? In this case, is it worthy of final action?
Okay. Thanks.
Anything else on this? On the East Monroe Economic Development Plan, do we have any more discussion that we need to go over? Okay. I think we kind of ironed that one out.
Paul, will we see staff's response to these criteria prior to the public hearing night, as in next week, or not?
Prior to the public hearing on the 11th, yes.
But not on the 28th?
Doubtful.
Okay.
We are pretty much overwhelmed at the moment by East Monroe and this appeal process. I'll at least bring some kind of a skeleton for maybe expand on these for the three, East Monroe in particular. Or, you know, one thing that could be done too is go back to last year's review of East Monroe as a starting point. But I'm sure we would not be able to get the our staff's complete finding and conclusions together for the three amendments for the 28th.
Will there be a target then for having the staff report, the complete staff report, available to the public sometime before the public hearing?
Well, yes. Yes, well ahead of the public hearing.
Okay.
I'd like to get that out. The hearing's on the 11th. I'd like to get it out at least a week ahead of time. That's going to be a fairly good-sized package. And it's going to be a lot of information to consider.
Thank you.
I guess the question I have in my mind, somewhere in the back of my mind, is I remember that we're going through a lot of this work so that it can be turned over to the person who's, or the company that's going to take our plan and rework it and that type of thing.
Right.
So I was curious as to how critical it has to be at this point in time. So as far as all of these items here, are they critical that they are done at this time, or are they done when we have a consultant and they go through their process and then update it? That's kind of where I'm.
Yeah, it would be both. We need to go through this process for these three 2013 amendments, and of course this update will engender a whole new revisit, and really in the end of that process, it's going to come back to these same criteria would have to be addressed. But it's vast amounts of changes.
Okay,
would be. I shouldn't say vast. Significant changes. Conditions.
All right. Okay, it helps a little bit.
It's kind of a repeating exercise, and in some cases it's a repeating redundant since we've done it before.
Yeah, I was thinking back to my military days when, you know, you had a group studying redundancy and this other group was studying redundancy and this other group was doing the same thing. So
The redundancy, department of redundancy.
Yeah. So I was just checking to make sure that we're not, you know, putting a lot of effort into something that is not super critical right now, and staff has got enough on their plate. It sounds to me like we're doing the right thing.
Yeah, so. We are. We need to go through the...
Okay.
We need to give these their due process this year, which includes that stuff. But appreciate your checking.
Commissioner Jensen?
I just wanted to understand this part of the process. Last month or September, there was that public hearing for the draft EIS. That
right.
public hearing was simply run by city staff.
Right.
Is it particular that this particular hearing is to the Planning Commission, or could it have also been done to city staff somewhere?
No, I believe the public hearing for the plan amendments is a charge of the Planning Commission.
Okay.
The option is that the public hearing could potentially be held before the City Council rather than the Planning Commission. But okay. I think it's more appropriate to conduct it with the Planning Commission. One required public hearing. No, not to say that the council couldn't decide to schedule a second public hearing with council.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Tolan, did you have anything else? Okay, I think that's been on the Eastman roll. Okay,
school.
Next
okay.
item. Did you have something, Paul? Okay, all right. Then I thought you were, that's all you say. Next item is CPA 2013-D school litigation fees and CPA 2012-09 school litigation fees. Paul?
Just a quick reminder, this is about amending the capital facilities element and the zoning code, and in the process adopting by reference the school district plans. I do have some changes to the municipal ordinance that were passed out with, I'll get to it when we start looking at it. I did print prematurely and didn't include my last revision, so in the favor of saving paper, I'll explain. It's very, very simple. But I did make some changes based on our discussion from last week. And of course, this is about changing the discount rate from 25% to 50%. And these are the numbers for the change from 25 to 50. You can see in the yellow, the single family goes from 2976 to 1984, and the other numbers that are affected. That's the bottom line for 2012, which is the current school plans that would be adopted with this amendment, 2012-2017. Let me bring up the zoning code on the screen, and we can get a look at that. Change that we've made is to remove that methodology, that formula from the city code. And by doing that, replacing that methodology with the statement in the middle paragraph that the council establishes a school impact fees based on the formula in the Snohomish County Code, and it cites that code section. Since the school districts rely on that to do their calculations, the city code does not need to be rectified or repeated in our code as long as we reference the Snohomish County Code. Now, there's a degree of protection there that says the school district could decide that they want to charge $50,000 impact fees, and we would have to reflect that in our fee resolution. But so the city is kind of protecting itself in a way for something that will never happen, but protect itself by requiring that the fees be based on the Snohomish County Code. Now, if that changes, then we would make the similar change in our code. But it does remove all that complicated mathematics, which I agree did not really have a good place in this municipal code. Mm-hmm. The other changes, here in exemptions, here's my missing link. This section, we did include this table under exemptions at the advice of the city attorney, so that it does set out what the exemptions are, or I'm sorry, what the impact fees are. But I'm going to take this section and this 2007, is that one? 100. Here's my pointer. Take this section and move it a couple of pages to this section.
You're talking about A and B?
Exemptions.
You're talking about items A and B?
Yes.
And moving it to
page 12. Which is the exemptions section. Yeah, there was some confusion, rightfully so, that 2007-100 was
okay.
Impact fee schedule exemptions. And we had the fees, and then did this language about a case-by-case basis on exemptions for low-income housing and so forth. And then having an additional section on page 12 for exemptions. So the first section will be brought under this section on page 12. That change doesn't show up in your copy.
Commissioner Demarest?
So, Paul, the table that is currently on page 10 is not going to do that section on page 12, right?
It will.
Well, but if we're talking about exemptions, why are we talking about the actual fees?
So the vice city attorney was to include this in that section because it does define what the fees are, and that the exemptions from that would be of those fees.
So then if 2 years from now the fees from the school district and their capital facilities plans change, we not only will have to change the percentage that's identified in 20.07.075, we'll also have to change the dollar amounts that are in the table under the exemption section. Well, that's rather cumbersome.
That's correct.
Which part, cumbersome or the changing?
Technically both, but this is a legal exercise that goes to ultra levels of clarity.
Yeah. I'm not an attorney, but I guess my suggestion would be that the statement about discount rate that's in 2007-075 on page 9, where it says 1/2, be put into the impact fee schedule followed by the table. And that then go immediately before the exemption section. Just a thought.
I see.
Yeah, in section 090, it says fee required, that's probably where the table should be.
And I mean, you've got linkage and flow, one follows the other. You identify the percentage of discount that can change. You immediately move into the table that shows how that calculates out to a dollar amount.
Right.
And then you move into a section where there may be exemptions.
Right.
Simply that would satisfy the attorney's need for clarity.
It flows better.
And it flows better.
It surely does.
But it also eliminates the DAT 100 section. So it renumbers your...
Right, it does. And when whatever changes we make, we send them to the code publisher for final, the final written version, word version. Okay, I think that's a good idea.
And would it make sense to have an asterisk or something else following that table that ties those numbers to the particular year of plan? Capital facilities plan?
We certainly could.
It just seems to me that putting both the discount percentage and numbers in, you're just adding complexity and potential for mistakes down the road.
Yeah, there's got to be some easy way to tie those together so when you're going to make changes in the future, whoever the people are, that those things are all picked up.
Right, because there was a disconnect a couple years back on not following through with the fee resolution before I got here. So those numbers were not actually changed for some time after they were adopted.
Okay, that's a good point.
Thank you.
Okay. I guess the next question is did we want to go back and walk through this page like we did the other document? How do we, commissioners, how do you want to do that? Do you want to walk through it? I'm okay with that. Commissioner Demers?
That's fine with me, but I for one don't have much to say on this tonight. I just have one or two other things to decide we've already talked about.
I know I don't. Because we did have a good discussion on it the other night, so.
Do we have comments we want to take?
Yeah, I'll be.
Oh, that's later.
Yes, I don't want to. Okay. I just want to know where we're going to get with this document, and then I can. Okay. Commissioner Tuttle.
Thank you. I have a question about the exemption section. I know what we're talking about. So are we saying we're taking out this whole dot 100 part? Because then there's another...
No, it's being moved from my... That's my understanding.
Over to the...
To page 12?
The 0.135?
Yes.
Okay.
The A paragraph is essentially being moved up because that's the table.
Okay.
And the B paragraph is being moved to that 135 section.
Okay. So. And then just one other question about exemptions. There's kind of two types of exemptions. And so the one of them is for low income. Are there any other types of housing that can apply or petition for an exemption, like over 55 development or something else that wouldn't really have an effect on the school? Owen and Ralph have an answer to.
Ralph, do you have something?
I can tell you that the practice has been strictly...
Excuse me, Ralph, would you go to the mic? Let me try that.
I'll do it right.
Thank you, Ralph.
Not a problem.
For the record, my name is Ralph Yingling. I live at 2371 950th Street, Monroe. I am the director of facilities for the Monroe School District. I can tell you the practice has been, and I don't know whether it's recorded in that document because I don't have the document in front of me, that strictly senior housing has been exempted from mitigation fees by the district?
Seems to be if it's not in here, it should be.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Is there any other type of...
Those are the only two that I'm aware of in the last 20 years.
On the low income, that's a petition to the city, but you're saying that the senior housing has been exempted by the district, so that doesn't even...
I can't tell you for sure which way it was done, but I know that the last senior housing that was strictly senior housing, they included a covenant that they were exempt from fees as long as it remained senior housing.
Does the low income also have an opportunity?
Again, I can't answer that, how it works.
For the district, I was just asking, because we're saying two different things.
Yeah. I'm not sure on the senior housing.
You just know that the...
I mean, on the low income.
Low income, okay. I feel like if that is something that the city looks at,
right,
then it should be in there.
I agree. If it is an exemption, that the city should be adopting it. It should probably be mentioned.
But it sounds like it might not even get to city level because they're exempting it back at the district level.
Yeah, but still, you know, to cover that base, at least mention that's an exemption made at...
It's in the housing element discussion of that.
Well, is it?
As far as providing incentives, so it would be consistent.
But that doesn't codify it.
Right.
But it would support the codification.
Yeah. I'm still thinking to tie it and wrap it all up. I still think something should be mentioned here to either reference something or... that type of thing. Paul, what do you think? I mean, if I'm looking in here and I'm looking for mitigation fees and there's an exemption for old people like me, this is where I probably would look first. And
that's where one would tend to look first,
yeah.
Maybe first and last.
Yeah.
So if there's to be an exemption, some sort of senior exemption, then I think it should be included in here. And if, in any case, it's something we can propose to amend,
right,
in this code section.
So any other groups that I can't think of at that point that we might have in the past provided an exemption for?
Right now, we exempt low income by a certain number of, I think, a couple different categories of low income, and we also exempt transitional housing, which is a 24-month or less for a transition between homeless and occupying an actual home or...
Is that in the housing element, though, do you think?
That transitional is in this code, I believe. Or is it... It's in this code under page 12, the last paragraph, transitional housing facilities.
Okay. Commissioner Rodman?
Yes. If I remember correctly, the county, you have to go to the county court and apply for this, and you can be elderly or low income and get this off your taxes at the county court right now.
I know there are further, there's more discussion in detail of exemptions in... I'm sorry. It's in this section. Retract my beginning of my statement.
Well, I just think either we put the other ones in or we take this one out, because it's weird to just mention one possibility.
Commissioner Demarest?
Senior housing should be in here. If he intends to exempt it, it should be in here in the exemptions.
So we will need to include or check for a definition of senior housing and how it's defined, much as we do low income or transitional or other definitions.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. And thank you, Ralph, for your input on that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Sherman.
Paul, is there any codification of exemptions tied to a definition of what is low income housing? If not, there probably should be in this section. And perhaps you said that there have been some exemptions given in the process in the past.
We're in the process, well, actually, there were some exemptions this year with the Hollywood Project downtown in Fremont.
Was that
for
mitigation fees?
Transitional housing.
Was that school mitigation fees or something else?
That was school.
That was parks.
No, it was schools and transportation.
Okay, I don't remember that schools.
I think they were assessed parks, but not schools or transportation. And I believe there was also something regarding the utility connections for transition.
Commissioner Sherman?
Yeah, Commissioner Demarest set me straight that in 2007-100B, there is the provision for the City Council to grant exemptions on a case-by-case basis.
For the low income.
For the low income.
Okay, so that is an act.
Yes.
That's why I think there should be some consistency and not just mention that one group.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Thank you. First off, on page 6, just under 2007-061, minimum requirements. Paul, I think in the very last sentence there, we want to take out a reference to the formula contained in this chapter.
Yes, thank you.
And then my next thing, and this is already existing text, but as I look at it, it doesn't make any sense. And we're back on exemptions on page 13. At the top of 13, section B, obviously rebuilding or replacement of an existing legally established dwelling is exempt, as it should be. I'm trying to understand the rationale or the relationship between B and D1 under manufactured homes, where it talks about installation of replacement or installation of a replacement manufactured home on a lot or such a site where school impact fees for such manufactured homes previously been paid, et cetera, or where it existed. A manufactured home is no different than a legally established dwelling unit, correct?
That's correct. It is a dwelling unit.
So in that regard, it seems that D1 has no purpose. It doesn't need to be there. It's just goes beyond redundant.
It's a very long sentence also.
it's nonsensical.
I think you're right. I think that's redundant.
That's redundant. So D2, I don't have a problem. That's not a residential building.
No, that's not true.
Anything else, Commissioner Demarest?
That is all that I have, except perhaps one more, I guess. And that is still under exemptions in A, reconstruction, remodeling, and construction of the following activities. And it only lists one thing under there, and that's A1. Are those the following activities, or is that, in fact, relating to B, C, D, and E? In which case it's nonsensical.
Actually, you should never have a one where you don't have a two. That's the rules of writing. I get an F.
Paul, you see what I'm saying?
Okay.
Well, one is it not? It's referring to construction of new units.
A1,
new transitional housing unit. Construction or remodeling of transitional housing facilities.
Okay, so that's an activity. Right?
And it qualifies transitional facilities.
What's the second activity under A?
There is none.
So perhaps we need to revisit that paragraph as well.
Doesn't matter. You can combine A and 1 together, actually.
Right. We don't have following activities, remodeling or construction of transitional housing facilities. Mm-hmm.
That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Commissioner Jensen.
Now that you've crossed it all out, I'm thinking, I wonder if the difference between B and D1 is D1 talks about being previously paid. Is it possible someone could have vacant land that they've previously paid fees, and now we adopt this, and now they come along and want to add their replacement or whatnot, manufactured home, where B is specifically talking about you're not increasing the number of dwelling units that was there before. Could that in fact be part of the difference?
Well, if you had a site where the mitigation fee had been paid,
one you hadn't put anything on it yet.
Oh, well, school impact fees are assessed with a building permit.
Okay.
I suppose it could be possible that a residential unit was torn down 20 years ago and it's been vacant 30 years ago and been vacant ever since. And if the applicant made the case, could document somehow that there was a structure there and that it had paid the fee, but in a case like that, I think the fee would be assessed for the new unit.
So what would it be?
Would be.
Okay.
I don't think.
So you're saying there's a line that gets crossed over time?
Without proper documentation for vacant ground, I would have to say impact fees are due.
Building was there 5 years ago and burned down. Actually, that wouldn't be fair. It was an old house built in 1920, burned down 5 years ago, the land sat fallow since. Fees are due? It doesn't seem quite right.
Yeah.
Case by case. Now, that deserves a little more investigation. You know, it does.
Yeah, now that you think about it, you could have a house that is torn down and a new house built on it sometime later. Could have the same effect. Mm-hmm.
Then I have a question, why is it under manufactured homes and not under any homes?
Well, that's why it said the manufactured homes should go away. It didn't make any sense. Yeah. Because the same questions pertain to B.
Commissioner Schuller?
I'm wondering if we just encountered this, the home that burned one lot south of the Sky Valley Education Center, they have a power pole up, it looks like they're going to build a new home. Have they come in for a permit, Paul? Do you have any idea?
Talking with Kelsey, just going through the vet clinic about 4 or 5 minutes.
I'm sorry, I missed your question.
There is a vacant lot where a home burned and was torn down in the past month or so. And
oh, yes.
I was wondering if they come in, because it looks like they're going to build something else there, and whether or not they were charged.
I don't believe anything's come in.
Right. So, but that's the situation we're talking about, right?
Right. That's a short term.
And so it needs to be addressed.
There may be something in this section that addresses that, but If not, it probably should be addressed.
Well, it should be in A, right? Which is talks about reconstruction, remodeling, construction.
It's not explicit.
No, it's not.
Section B says exempt would be rebuilding or replacement of an existing legally established dwelling unit where no additional dwelling unit is created. So this is the replacement of an existing legally established dwelling unit, and it's not going to go to a duplex necessarily. So in this case, that home, even though it's never paid a fee, would be exempt by this language. We just need to decide if that's what we want.
And even if that lot had sat there 20 years since that home burned down, it would still be exempt.
Yeah.
Let me take a legal opinion, but if the language explicitly says replacement of, what does that mean, replacement? Replacement of a house I tore down to immediately build a home, or a replace a home that was removed 20 years ago?
Yeah.
You guys ask tough questions.
You'll miss me, won't you?
There's probably going to face it in the next few weeks. It didn't even prefer it on that lot.
Yeah. If we are in fact agreed that we're taking out D1, just don't get caught in the same trap of A and don't leave 2 behind with a number. Right. I'm sure you'll get that. Okay. Anything else, commissioners, on this? Commissioner Demers?
I'd like to talk about the discount fee.
The discount fee...
That's stipulated in here.
The percentage?
Yes.
Okay.
Paul, this is a draft that's going to public hearing. Does the city take a position on what the discount fee should be?
Well, in this version, the staff took a position to change the discount fee from 25 to 50%.
Is that staff's job?
Well, I think it's staff's job to make a recommendation.
Okay. I'm just wondering if, given that this is a document that's going to hearing, if it should look like it's a foregone conclusion that a discount amount is decided upon by putting it in there versus perhaps under blank to be decided upon once we've received testimony in the public hearing, to be decided on in the form of a recommendation by us once we've received the public testimony.
And that would engender a change following the public hearing, obviously, and the commission's recommendation. I think it's fair to go into a public hearing setting with a recommended, in this case, it's a specific item, a discount, that can be contested or supported or opposed. And out of that comes a decision as to whether to change it in terms of the commission's.
So it could
well change the staff recommendation, depending on how that's driven.
What's the basis then so far for the staff's recommendation?
Well, this was last year's recommendation. And frankly, our conditions have changed since then and deserves to be revisited.
Okay, I just want to make sure that it's clear that it's not a decided thing yet. If staff chooses to make a recommendation, certainly I think that's within your power to do so. I just think we need to be careful in how it's presented through the process.
Right. If there is a staff recommendation, it would be just that, a staff recommendation, not a one that's being put forth for consideration by commission council, not a done deal.
Well, didn't we do, when we went through this last year after, and we had a public hearing, we forward a recommendation to City Council. Wasn't that the same recommendation we forwarded to City Council, which they decided not to act upon?
Yes. This commission recommended, I believe it was 6-1. Change the discount to 50%.
So the original discount fee was recommended to the Planning Commission, and we took and recommended that to City Council, and
that's right.
It came back to us again. So it's still the same recommendation from last year.
Commissioner, seeing that anything of this nature that is subject to a public hearing, the book isn't closed. And that it is open to discussion, anything with the document. And so I don't see that as being overreach or overstep on the part of the planners and their staff in making that recommendation. That seems reasonable to me.
I think it's just important that we don't lose sight of the fact that we're really talking about different things as we look at this process and this decision-making, this recommendation-making process. We're looking at structure of the comp plan element. We're looking at structure of the zoning ordinance. And we're looking at structure of the fee. And really our decision, we're making decisions on multiple points. And we're making recommendations on multiple points. And they are different.
And we also need to be sure that whatever change we make in the code are reflected in the comp plan and vice versa as we go through this.
Thank you.
Anything else, Commissioner? Commissioner Jensen?
Well, you brought up an interesting point about the last year, if I understand this correctly, the Planning Commission, you said that the vote 6-1 recommend the 50% discount rate.
Right.
And then the City Council, did they just take no action or did they physically, formally reject that?
I can answer that. The Commission was considering this school mitigation fees as a standalone comp plan amendment, which we could do since it was tied to the budget cycle, which is what we're in the midst of right now. And it's really come full circle since then. It did go to council, and after a couple of meetings, they just simply took no action. They decided to not make a decision,
okay,
knowing that it would come back eventually.
So there was no indication from them of whether they were supporting or rejecting the 50% at that stage.
Okay. Thanks.
There was quite a bit of input from the public and the school district on that, and I think council decided to simply delay the decision.
Okay. Anything else, commissioners? If we have nothing else, then I'd like to offer to have come up and have a comment. If you have a comment, please give your name and address for the record.
Again, I'm Ralph Dingling, Monroe School District Facility Director, 2371 950th Street. When I appeared before you last week, I was asked a question as to why the district felt it needed a 25% discount rate rather than a 50% discount rate. And at that point, I said this was something I needed to give thought to before I gave you an answer. And after discussing that with my colleagues, the answer is really in three parts from the administration. First, we don't set the discount rate. We all know that that's done by council. We calculate the impact, and then rates are set by that. We have no choice with the county. They have a flat 50% rate. However, in the past, the City Council, in their wisdom, decided that the rate needed to be changed to a 25% discount rate and that's the rate they gave us to calculate. The second part of the answer is the fact that mitigation fees at a higher or lower discount rate save our current taxpayers' money. $1 million in mitigation fees was used to help build the Freilands Elementary. That's taxes people living in town at that point did not have to pay to build that school. And the third part of the answer is what it cost to provide housing for the new students generated by development. Impact fees are by their nature reactive. The houses are coming, the permits are being issued. We know that there are 250 houses in the pipeline, more or less, in the pipeline now in Monroe. We know by our demographic studies that those 215 houses are going to generate 152 or 153 students from Monroe School District. That 153 students translates into needing 6 classrooms. We currently have 900 students in portable classrooms. Those 6 classrooms that we need to provide for students will cost, at last summer's cost, right around $750,000 to provide completely outfitted certificate of occupancy classrooms. That's what it cost us. 250 of those houses at a 50% discount rate generates $496,000. That's far short of the $750,000 we need for temporary housing. At a 25% discount rate, the figure is much better for the school district because it comes in at $744,000, which is much, much closer to meeting the actual cost of housing the students that we expect to get from new development. And I would submit that as my answer to your question last week.
Okay. I had a question for Ms. Yang. Thank you. Your second point, the one about Freilands and how mitigation fees saved taxpayers $1 million of that construction cost. Those new homeowners or those new residents that came to town that helped bring about the need for the new school, they're able to pay off the bond for the balance of that total, are they not? That's been spread amongst
right
houses here today and houses here 5 years from today. New houses come on the tax rolls, they'll assume a portion of that liability as well.
I don't believe that's the case, because what happens is school funding is different than city funding, and perhaps our board member can help explain that, but basically we don't run on a millage rate like the city, we run on a flat fee. So what happens is if more houses come in, everybody's taxes go down. So everybody pays less for the bond.
Okay, and I appreciate that, but the new residents still, nonetheless, will pay a portion of the bond.
Yes.
In addition to the mitigation that they pay for buying a new house. Okay, thank you.
My turn? Hi, guys.
Excuse me, before you start, Paul, can we turn the light on?
Sure. This one?
Yep.
Yeah,
that's good.
Thank you, good to see you guys too. Nancy Truitt Pierce, I'm on the Monroe School Board. Address is 12003 Woods Creek Road, Monroe. Was there something else I'm supposed to say?
No.
Okay. Let me address that first one. The question that you just asked Ralph, his point that we spread taxes across the tax base. I did a fairly extensive study of this. Because those kids are in portables, because they're only housed temporarily with the mitigation fee, we still have to build schools. And that is a huge number that our taxing public have to cover. So the mitigation fee will get us through the transition from when the kids first get here until we get to the point where we can build schools for them. And then the entire tax base has to pick that up. So we have to pick up the gap in mitigation fees for temporary housing, and then they have to pick up the fees for building permanent schools later. So I did pass out a document. I wanted to make sure you guys could follow along. I know I'm easier. It's easier for me to follow along with somebody's comments if I can see what they're saying too. So I have three premises and three key points for you. And even before I get there, I remember I was supposed to tell you, thank you for having a special meeting because I never get to come otherwise. You guys are always meeting exactly at the same time the school board is. So this is my only chance to see the Planning Commission, and I'm pleased with that, for the opportunity. So premise one for me personally is that growth is good. We should be attracting residential growth to this town. And I think that's what we're all talking about as key leaders in the town, is how do we get more people to want to live here, because that's better for everybody if we can have growth. And I certainly believe that. I think the most effective engine to get residential growth, if you really want to attract residential development here in Monroe, great schools is one of the most important things you can have. People move to a town for schools. So we've got to have really good schools. And that's something that we share in common. We're in it together. We've got to figure out how to have good schools in this town. So one of the key points Ralph already made, our taxing base is different than the city's taxing base. Your point, Dave, is that if you add some, Commissioner Demarest, if you add someone to the tax base, they help the burden of the tax base, but we actually don't get more money in the schools. The schools don't get more money, it spreads it further. So the other taxpayers get a little bit of, until we build schools, and then everybody has a bigger number that they have to cover. So the tax base is different. If you add houses, you get more money in the city coffers from that house on a consistent basis, but we don't in schools. The real thing to think about as leaders in this town is the state of our facilities. That's what I think we all have to come down to. So in Snohomish, they passed $500 million bond several years ago. They rebuilt their schools. They modernized their schools. They built a new high school. They have capacity for their kids in their schools. In Monroe, we're really behind the curve. We have old facilities that are in a lot of need of repair. We just did a new analysis a year ago when we came in and talked to you. We had about a $90 million backlog of maintenance operations needs, short-term capital needs. It's up to $117 million now. We just did another analysis of it. We have a committee working now to analyze the needs of the schools into the future that we've asked citizens to come sit on, and they're doing that analysis now. But with 900 kids in portables, that's the equivalent of two schools, two elementary schools or middle school. So we're already behind two schools. It's enormously expensive to build schools. I went through three different analyses to try and figure out the cost per child to build a school, and I kept coming to the same number. It's $55,000 per kid. So if you have 1,000 kids that you need to build schools for, do the math. It's a huge number that our taxpayers have to cover. In Snohomish, they don't have that. They're ahead. In Monroe, we're behind. I think to make us truly competitive as a city, we do need to look at all the fees, but there's a lot of fees. The school mitigation fee is just one of a whole laundry list of the fees. We've got water capital improvement, wastewater capacity, parks, transportation. I think developers will look at the bottom line of the total fees. Last year, when we were in front of council, at one point council said we ought to look at all the fees all together and see where we can make some adjustments so that we can get our fees to be competitive, both for this town and in this county, instead of just doing schools. Schools are the one that we make up the least later. All the other fees you make up on growth. The schools are the ones you don't. Right now, we're ahead of the curve on parks. We have more parks in Monroe than other towns, and we're behind on schools. So I think as a commission, one of the things I'd encourage you to do is look at that whole picture. Don't look just at mitigation fees for schools. Look at the fees you charge development, and see how can we make it more competitive and still do what's right for Monroe. Because if we can, we need schools more than we need almost anything else in this town. So can I answer any questions?
I have a question. I'm not sure if you can answer it or not. How long can we go with the schools that, you know,
that we have currently
temporary housing now. How long can we continue that before?
I think we're way over time now. We have every single campus, we have 10 campuses, and every single campus has portables. We're pretty much out of room to build more portables. We're looking at ways we can expand for islands, but we're, you know, we think we might be able to get one more wing on one end. The state legislature is looking at all-day kindergarten. I hope they pass it. I think all-day kindergarten would make a huge difference. We don't have facilities for those kids. We can't put them in the facilities we've got now. We don't have room for more portables. We've got to build some schools.
Okay. And then the other thing that, that goes along with that question there is, are most of these kids, I'm assuming, are not high school kids. These are elementary school kids.
The problem is that you don't know what they're going to be when they move in.
Well, so, I understand that, but I'm talking about right now.
Yeah, high school is the one that we have. We're better capacity at high school than we are at the elementary. And we're seeing
a fairly new facility.
Yeah, it's fairly new, and we've got a lot of kids. We're being very successful at getting them into Running Start, which I think is a good thing for kids, but it takes a little pressure off. And Sky Valley is doing really well, and it takes pressure off the high school.
Commissioner Rodman, you had a question?
Yes. It sounds like, that may be wrong, our mitigation fees are a band-aid for the school district, so we need to pass a levy to build new schools because the band-aids are not working.
Yeah, we definitely need to pass a good bond here in this town.
So,
but that still won't deal with the short-term need.
Yeah.
Because you can't build schools that fast. So as you build houses, they have kids. And so the generation rate is 0.615. You get 60 kids for every 100 houses you build. We still have to put them someplace while we're building the schools.
Have we tried to get bonded going for building schools yet?
We're going to be looking at this time. We think we're going to put the bond out this coming 2014. We've got the learning levy up, and we've got we're looking at technology levy. The bond the year after.
Commissioner Dirksen?
I do agree that we probably should be looking at all the other fees, but we're only given the mitigation fee. That's the only one we can look at and decide. So is there any way that we could be looking at some of those other fees, too, to see where it kind of fits in? I understand that we'd like to get some of the fees down, and this may be one way to do it, but I kind of agree with her that we need to be looking at all the fees. Why are we just looking at the mitigation only?
You know, and as your comments reminded me that there was some discussion at council level about the main thing being part of the reason it was delayed was to allow consideration of other impact fees, particularly parks fees. It's one that's fairly ready to pick on, if I can say it that way. But there has not been any work done on trying to bundle all of these fees together, parks, transportation, utilities, and schools. There has not been any work done to work toward that effort to do it comparatively, consider them all together cumulatively. But it's a good point.
I think the other answer to that question might be is because right now we're working on a set of development plan amendments.
Okay.
And the school medication fee, which happens to work at this particular time. So right now that's what we're working on. But I think, you know, as we go along, if any of the other development plans have to do with impact fees, maybe that's one we look at. I don't know.
Yeah, it just seems very near to me right now.
Commissioner Demarest?
I'll yield to
Commissioner Sherwood.
Well, what would be the process by which all of the fees could be looked at? Would it even involve the Planning Commission or not? It would strictly be a council action.
They would tell us.
It would involve the commission if there was a comp plan or a zoning code amendment.
And that's what this fee is different than those fees. Is that correct? that if this involves a comp plan amendment or they do not?
The others would involve potentially a comp plan amendment, but certainly a zoning code Chapter 20 amendment similar to this section on school mitigation fees. There are sections for transportation, parks, the utility is set up in a different chapter, but I don't, there are no fees, I don't believe there are utility fees in the zoning code. I have one more to add to that. I think some of this will come out of our 2015 comp plan update, especially in terms of the parks, because parks has some, once the park plan is updated, then there will be some, there'll be a new long-range improvement plan that will not include perhaps some things that are in that plan now. One example is the landfill site west of the Galaxy Theater was seen as a like a sports park of some kind. And that's going away. It's going to be sold as for development. But that update and the transportation plan update will involve some revisit to impact fees that are now being assessed in accordance with whatever the long-range plan comes up with, the long-range improvement plans for both of those areas. So that would, granted it's not until 2014-15, but that would trigger some of this collective consideration for impact fees across the board.
Well, thank you. You have another question?
I do. Thank you, Nancy. And some of this may go the route more appropriately, perhaps, but yeah, I raised the question last week of the fact that I was still wrestling with the 50 versus the 25. One of the points that I raised was that how do we justify charging a higher fee or a lesser discount than Snohomish County, than an incorporated, mm-hmm. just because they're across a line. Mm-hmm. And I thought Ralph's comment about the transitional housing and the example you gave, Ralph, about how a 25% discount almost covers the cost of that transitional housing, whereas the 50% discount leaves us falling far short. I thought that to be especially compelling. And I'm curious, you talk, Ralph, you talked about 250 houses, 150, two or three students. What percentage of the new students anticipated in the district coming from inside the city versus outside the city?
That's just the inside city.
Outside. That's just inside, yes.
I don't have those figures at my hand. You know, I couldn't tell you right off of my head tonight.
Is it fair to say probably that the vast majority are coming from within the city limits?
At this point, most of the growth, has been within the GMA and not outside the county. It used to be different than that, but it has changed in recent years.
Okay.
And I'd add to that, if I could, that I think our job in Monroe is to figure out how to make Monroe attractive to development, and the county, it's so big, the schools won't make much difference if people decide to come to Snohomish County or not. They're not trying to attract growth. We are. So if we're trying to attract growth, then one of our best things to do is to make sure our schools look as good as they are. Our schools, I'm very impressed with the quality of this, of the service being delivered. Our facilities, they're terrible. And we deserve, our kids deserve better than that. So together, collectively, we need to figure that out.
The other question I have, as I said, I'm still wrestling with the difference between the two levels of discount.
But don't forget the bottom line. It really won't matter because your developers they're just going to look at your total, all fees together.
And the total's made up of the sum of the parts, without a doubt. I lost my thought. Oh, I know what it was. Ralph, you said that the county doesn't talk about the 50%. That's what they are.
Correct.
It's a policy decision on the county's part, is it not?
Yes.
Does the Monroe School District go to the county and say, we would like less discount from you?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Okay. So the district has and has in the past on a consistent basis, and will in the future ask the county to change that discount?
I don't know what we'll do in the future. I know I've personally talked to the county about it.
Okay.
We haven't taken a formal stand.
It just seems to me that if you're taking a formal stand with the city requesting a 25% discount, you would take the same formal stand with the county and ask them to do the same.
I think it's a good suggestion. I'll certainly look at that.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Commissioner Sherwood?
The definition of insanity being doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Why are we doing this again? We did it last year and had a certain result. Why are we doing it again? What is that content?
Mostly so that we're following due process and considering these three amendments cumulatively. Grant, we did do this last year and we did come to recommendation. And my first thought was, well, we've already acted upon that, so we don't need to do it again. But then I, after further thought, decided it really did need to come back since it is being considered in the context of the other amendments. We're taking action on all of these together.
So the list of six things, one of them was cumulative effects, and that's what's different this time around than last time around?
For this fifth amendment, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman? Commissioner Demers, was your question regarding the 250 houses on Eugene? Okay, I can tell you that I think it's closer to 300, but those are all within city limits.
I know they are. Yeah, I'm just curious as to what the school district is expecting from outside the city limits.
Okay.
In the way of future growth. In the near term, anyway. I know it's hard to project 5 or 10 years down the road.
Anything else? Again, I want to say thank you for your comments, Nancy and Ralph. Appreciate that you came tonight. And you're capable of coming tonight. So, nice having you.
Thank you.
Well, and you can be here on the 11th, right? Because there's no school board meeting on a holiday.
We moved ours to Tuesday, so we can. And I will.
Yeah. I have one comment.
Commissioner Robin?
The group met in that when it started, I was on. And they were going to let us annex the property so that we could, the cities could handle the growth. And so we kind of sent them about 5 or 10 acres out of the county, and the cities would have to get tighter, which we have done. Now, the county is making it a little tougher on the city if they're going to charge the contractor less money for mitigation fees in the city, and the big contractor is going to go work and build the houses out in the county because it's cheaper to do it there than in the city. So it's kind of, come on guys, this has been this way since the beginning. It just kind of bites itself, you know. Frustrating.
Commissioner Jensen?
Well, I was wondering, I've heard a couple of times that part of what was pushed back or maybe why it wasn't taken or acted on last year was this notion of they wanted to look at all these other fees together. And no income government tends to work. That day may or may not ever come. I wonder if it would be more appropriate, since we don't have or they aren't in the process of looking at all the fees together, if we should be doing all this work to removing this mitigation school stuff from point A to point B in the city paperwork, maybe we shouldn't be changing the rate during this move and let that rate change be a separate issue that is taken up when they are ready to look at all of the fees together.
And if I may, that could be a recommendation that comes out of this process.
Okay.
Right.
Commissioner Dole?
Thank you. I also know that the idea of lowering the fees in general was part of the scenario. The other part was a lot about making the fees consistent and being consistent with a lot of the other cities around us, and a lot of it being the difference between the county and the city discount rate. So looking at all of the fees is a good idea, and it should be done, and that's a decision that council members will have to come to and put that on the agenda and then ask the commission to look into that. But that's not the whole reason. Part of the reason is we take 25% discount, right?
Right.
We take 25% discount. A lot of surrounding cities and the county that serves the same district as, you know, it's Monroe School District outside of city limits is, there are different rates. And that was part of the reason why it came up as well. So I think we're being charged with trying to decide whether or not it needs to be consistent, not just figuring out how to lower rates for builders. That's not the 100% of what we're trying to look at here. And I want to make sure that we're not going off onto rabbit trails when we're not being asked to decide that. We're being asked to look at this. So.
Okay. Commissioner Demarest?
Yeah, well said, Bridget. I don't think there's anything that says that we have to go to the lesser road of the county.
No, but that's part of why it came up, not just we want to make it cheaper for builders. I mean, certainly there are a lot of other fees to look at, and I know that that is what the district came up with, too, as an argument for your side of the argument. So I just don't want to get distracted by all of that either. It's not our decision. It's the will of the council, and they have to decide that they want to look at all the fees. And, you know, if that is something that the district is serious about, I agree with what Commissioner Demarest said, too, that the there should be an official stance taken towards the county, and if that hasn't been done, that should be done. And the city council should be the ones that are approached for looking at all the fees and getting that on their agenda, because we don't set the agenda. So that's all.
Again, thank you.
Thank you.
And drive safe going home, please. Okay, anything else on this? All right. Then we can move to CPA 2013-A comprehensive plan text amendments for land use, housing, and economic development. Paul?
Land use. We can touch on that. There's still a little bit of work to be done, but I did make a few changes. I don't know if I have this on the screen. Varying levels of security. And let's I think there were some minor changes to that paragraph. Then 17. Then the natural environment, Mr. Sherwood had volunteered to take a look at that, and he did prepare some text that I did pass around. Cut that today, and actually we haven't had a chance to look at and adjust for consideration.
I did go through it, and if you want, you and I can sit together and I can go over what comments or any questions.
Okay. But I know you haven't had much of a chance to look at it, but I'd be curious to see what people are thinking in general about what Commissioner Sherwood has done with that section. And I haven't had a chance to check it myself. But thank you for your reference there.
I did go through it, and I mentioned it. I mentioned to Jeff that I liked what he did, but it took a lot of stuff out of there that, you know, to me probably didn't belong in the first place.
I want it to be known that I will take no umbrage if this ends up in the wastebasket. Exercise personally.
Why didn't you tell me that before?
So, I figured I broke me in before I made that statement. So.
Commissioner Demarest?
I haven't had time to read it, so I'm not going to comment on it. But Paul, do I understand correctly that the natural environment section that is in the document in front of us tonight is the same as we had last week, or there?
That's correct.
There have been no real changes to that.
Just a couple of pretty minor changes.
So
just done.
It seems like any time spent on this portion of the document tonight would be counterproductive.
I think so. I think
not having read the other proposed.
We can revisit next week and perhaps. Well, we need to come to some decisions about how we want to treat this as staff, and come up with maybe do some comparison.
Commissioner Rodley?
Yes, we have comments in here about the Highway 2 traffic situation. I read it, and it says what we plan on doing, but I haven't heard from the state DOT yet. Is you kind of like to have somebody who knows something about this in Olympia to come and give us an idea of what really is going to happen the Highway 2.
Which page are you on? You on
12.
Oh, yes. Well, DOT in their comments about East Monroe said that there would be a roundabout where the bypass intersects with existing USD 2, but of course the big question is when is that bypass ever going to be built? And I think there is some movement afoot to do the first phase and possibly second phase. The first phase being an extension of 522 north to the bypass right of way, and the second phase is from that point east to the Highway 2 intersection just west of East Monroe.
Okay.
And third phase is from the 522 west all the way back to Roosevelt Road, quite some distance. But there doesn't seem to be any, that I know of, anything concrete to report on just how that stands in the long-range plans. I don't know that anyone has an answer. Kirk Pearson, you know, he's a resident. Maybe he can shed some light on what
I talked to her quite a bit about it. He isn't into that. He's
no.
Into other things.
Okay. A quick comment back on page 17 that I was talking about tonight. remember why it was highlighted, but this one, there was a reference to reformatory law, I simply took it out. That was conflicting with 177. Mm-hmm. That was the And yeah, we'll come back and talk about natural environment. And then I did not have a chance to, on page 29, I started checking into the average density number of the city. And it's coming up quite a bit lower, but that's something I need to pursue a little farther. I need to check on that. And there are a couple of other tables, page 31, 32, that I need to go back and recheck the math. And there may be one or two cases where the housing is presented in terms of housing projections to 2035. And if there are, they need to be brought back to 2025. That was a part of the problem earlier when we had some conflicts in capacity. So we're comparing apples to apples and using 2025 for the basis for this update. The 2015 comp plan will tackle 2035.
Okay, so some of these tables in here that have the 2035 reference should not be 2035?
At least in relation to housing specifically, yes, right. And there's some of these tables need to be checked.
Okay, for example, the Snohomish County population forecast for City of Monroe references 2035.
And population-wise, I think that's okay. But what I may do is bring them back, bring everything back to 2025 to be consistent.
Okay. Mr. Demarest?
Thank you. I have a number of comments through this, but so, Bob, I heard you right. There are no changes to the tables either for this week from what we had last time we talked about this? So we should just disregard
No,
it
not in the last few pages before the goals, you know, like 31, 32, 33, in that area.
Those tables that we had issues with last week are still unchanged.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, didn't quite get there.
Okay. Well, I don't know whether to make comments or not. It just seems like there's still so much that needs to be done.
On the land use?
On the land use, I don't
know. Well, since we're going to have to go through it quite a bit after we review Jeff's section, maybe that is a good thing if we go back and cover the land use element at that time.
We could. The national environment does stand alone. Mm-hmm. And can be addressed by itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether it's worth taking the time to make comments. Otherwise, with regard to this section, actually, when I think about it, if we take the natural element out, take the tables out of it, I don't have any comments. But I agree with you.
Might be worthwhile for you.
Let's go ahead, and if you have a few, let's cover them.
Okay.
See where we end up next time.
On page 12.
Okay, are we talking about the red line one?
I'm working off the red line.
Okay.
That was in tonight's packet.
I didn't print that.
That section, future visions and issues, where you made the improvements based on last week's discussion with regard to State Route 2, the roundabouts, etc. The very last sentence is advocating for looking at the East Monroe area for urban density development by the word should. And should we be advocating in here or not? That's how I would take it.
I think that language has been modified to some degree, but it's language that was plugged into this comp plan last year as a part of the East Monroe Amendment. some language that was changed last spring to bring the application into greater consistency with the comp plan. As you recall, the comp plan was talking about that property as being preserved in open space and preserving the gateway to the city and so forth, and the entrance to the city, and not envisioned for commercial development.
I'm just wondering if we want to be that strong in a position versus could be considered, which to me is a lot less big determined.
I had two thoughts. One is that, real quickly, property may have potential versus having perhaps could be considered.
Could be considered.
A little softer.
Yeah.
I don't problem with that.
I would agree with that, Paul.
While you're talking about that paragraph, I have a few comments. Unless you want to
know that. Please, that's fine with me.
I'm still a little bit bothered in how it just reads, because it's essentially talking about two roundabouts. Mm-hmm. And as I read through it, I still can find myself getting confused about one roundabout over the other. And the fact that it almost seems to imply that the WSDOT's roundabout has, I mean, we know it will have some sort of impact, but it really seems to tie it in too much with the other, you know, potential East Monroe, this area. I've drawn up the thing here on the computer, and I don't know if there's a way I can, you know, I can't send it to you. I've got it on the thumb drive now if we want to look at it. But basically, I'm taking the sentence that in here in the middle that says a roundabout to distribute traffic between existing US 2, that whole section all the way to ending, that whole underlined red section ending with some traffic that would otherwise bypass the city. I am suggesting take that whole sentence, move it first under the future visions, so that it's all by itself, has nothing to do with East Monroe. It's, this is what WSDOT's planning to do. End of paragraph. And then a new paragraph picks up, and I've tried making a few edits, and some of what you just said, what Commissioner Demarest has said, I just type in here too, but the way I've written it out, I was proposing, I'll just read what I've got here, allowing potential residential or commercial development at an urban density consistent with the GMA on the site would require private investment for extending utilities and services and constructing access roads across the wetland areas to the limited buildable portions of the site, period. Development of the property will require access from US 2 following, here's where I made some changes, following mitigation as required by WSDOT, and this would mean some wordsmithing, if they even permit it, given the proximity to their proposed roundabout to the west. Because I don't like that we're implying that WSDOT said you can do this, and this might be one of the answers that was just brought up. If we simply rephrase that to say that we're not guaranteeing WSDOT's going to let you do this. Whatever they say that you've got to do, you've got to do, and they may not let you do it. And then, let's see, then I think of the last part, maybe you say the same, while impacted by environmental and access issues with its frontage along US 2, the property may have potential for commercial development. The areas within city limits and could be considered for urban density development to the extent allowed by environmental protection regulations. So did a little bit of rearranging and really altered, took out, in fact, any reference that East Monroe might build around it. Simply that they have to do what WSDOT says if WSDOT lets them.
Yeah, this, you're not familiar with the East Monroe, that's been taking place in the past, but the WSDOT has basically said that a roundabout will likely be required at the private property entrance. But I can make a reference, or at least that's on the basis of that access point being a minimum of a quarter mile from the
But do we want to be using WashDOT's words here?
Well, that's why I said.
I'd rather leave it more open-ended to say, you go ask WashDOT what they say, and then we're not liable if somebody says, well, you said we can do it, the WashDOT said we could do this.
Yeah, we have a number of letters, redundant, in fact, letters from them in that regard, and that's why I use the word likely.
Yeah, but I don't know. To me, it feels like we should be answering the questions for WashDOT here.
And actually, maybe we don't need to get into that level of detail about the roundabout for the East Monroe property, since we don't know for sure what that's going to be.
Yeah. Are you mean the other part for the bypass part?
Just last mentioned the Highway 2
yeah, that's
bypass,
what,
but maybe drop reference to a roundabout. Because that might not be the solution. Sure. And that's getting in the weeds on the property.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Overpass.
Commissioner Dimrush, you had a comment on that?
I just did it. I kind of actually like where you took Steve's suggestion. And Steve, I kind of liked your idea of the preamble with regard to the Western roundabout.
Yeah.
As a separate paragraph from the development aspect or issues of the Eastern property.
Right. They should be separated out.
I can have a copy of that.
And I like the idea of taking that complexity out of there and make it more general. Commissioner Demers?
Page 14. The bottom there, future visions and issues, talking about the fairgrounds. Paul, we talked about the four walkable connections between the fairgrounds and the city south of US 2. I think we should keep on that out, say, between the fairgrounds and the city to the south and east. Why not? And certainly the Highway 2 corridor east has been important. And for that matter, so is the Highway 2 corridor west, connecting to the foothills, for instance.
That's true, it's not just south.
It's really southeast and west.
That could be expanded on.
On the next page, 15, in the existing conditions and issues for the reformatory, that highlighted paragraph currently has in total mail-in made population approximately 2,500. Over 1,100 staff. I think we want an and in there.
Yes.
Staff might not appreciate having 2,500 inmates over them.
Probably not. They might be a little trouble with that one.
And is that correct that there are still no women on that facility anywhere? I thought there was a woman sexual or sex offender portion of the population. No?
Okay. Not to my knowledge.
Sure.
I'll confirm that.
Okay. On page 27, the highlighted paragraph, the city's incorporated population has grown significantly over the last several years, primarily due to annexation by an increasing rate of new residential construction activity. I think that's old language.
Actually, it is old language. I just highlighted the entire paragraph.
The last several years have not seen significant population.
There was actually no residential subdivision activity at all between 2006 and 2012.
So we need to revisit.
That has to be rewritten.
And then, Paul, page 29, going to your comment about the 2.47 units per residential development per acre, the average density?
Yes.
We've had a discussion over the course of the years of, are we looking at density on a gross or net basis? And if we look at it on a net basis, it comes out much different than when we look at a gross basis. And that is of the residentially zoned areas taking the sensitive areas at a minimum out, so that we're actually talking only about developable property. to come up with that density calculation.
I'll check it in.
On page 33, I'll leave that one alone. That goes to the population projection. On page 34, rather, the middle paragraph there on the commercial industrial land supply. Do we want to draw a distinction between general and light industrial? The city's taken a position in the past that we weren't going to encourage general industrial, and yet as we read this, it doesn't do that.
Oh, I see. In the third sentence, 243 acres of land zoned industrial. Probably should differentiate between general and light. In fact, we only have, I believe, one parcel that's general industrial, the lakeside.
And I don't think that, at least in the past, the city hasn't wanted to look at getting more general industrial.
Yeah, that's correct. And there should be a note, something to that effect of promoting light industrial. Let me see if I come up.
Thank you. Page 35 at the top there, it talks about the acreages of light industrial land. And then it goes on to talk about the block plant site and Highway 2 is considered vacant. First off, those two sites aren't industrial. I believe the block plant and Highway 2 is service commercial. And I believe that the two of them would also add up to more than 6.8 acres. And that time, the block plant and then the Hoserland property to the north that's for sale around the, what's that?
Oh, the fine facility. What's the Jack in the Box?
Jack in the Box, yes. And on page 37, under the long paragraph, the long last paragraph there, we're saying that there appears to be an adequate supply of land to accommodate projected retail and service industry space requirements over the next 20 years. We're staying with that statement? Or do we not know yet? Fifth line down there, according to these estimates.
Oh, okay. Okay, I need to refine it just a bit that based on projected employment, gross employment projections, there's enough land capacity. I'm not sure how that, or if I go back and then split it off into retail, commercial versus industrial.
Is it not already split for industrial? The next sentence talks about being short on industrial.
There is a limited amount of land available, but actually there's a limited amount of commercial ground as well. And this could be a big part of the 2015 update, is just exactly how do we stand in over the next 20 years. I think that paragraph's going to need a little more work.
And the number, the 57.7 acres commercial zone land, is that correct or is that?
That is correct.
And is that inclusive of East Monroe or not?
No.
It's not. So without East Monroe, we have an adequate supply.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what that implies, and I believe that's a correct statement. The qualification of East Monroe is its location in Highway 2 sets it a bit apart from other parcels.
But this language is not doing that.
Even that needs to be qualified. Actually, there was some language previously about the locations of these areas. Actually, what I need to do is actually put the vacant ground maps in this report. That would help illustrate what's being talked about. the commercial ground, a lot of it's in, quite a bit of it's in just scattered small parcels, but the picture would be very helpful.
You're on a roll.
I'm on a roll. Actually, I have a somewhat related question. Well, I'll go back to procedure as it relates to this and relates to the East Monroe application. You said in your presentation on East Monroe that if we're to review that application in light of comp plans as they're proposed to be, right?
Yes.
The elements as they're proposed to be. In what sequence, then, one, will be hearing these applications, and two, how will we know what the amended comp plan elements say with them not being finished to allow us to make a determination on East Monroe?
Well, they would have to be finished before that was determination was made.
Is it finished
in
council action?
Yes. And I think in terms of order, the text amendments should be adopted prior to East Monroe. Well, the text amendments and the school amendment, and then East Monroe, since East Monroe is at least at one point, consistent with the comp plan, is contingent on changes in the comp plan text.
You said adopted, and I maybe didn't mean adopted, because there's no way that that can happen, because these won't be adopted until perhaps sometime in December.
Right.
Prior to which we will need to have made a recommendation based on what's not yet adopted.
Right. Which is true of all amendments.
But they don't all piggyback the same way that these two do.
And maybe that should be a specific part of the recommendation for East Monroe, is that it is deemed to be recommended on the basis or tying it to the text amendments. Something to keep in mind, that one does directly relate, this is part of the cumulative thing, but in this case we didn't extract that language for East Monroe specifically, but that East Monroe is dependent on adoption of the text amendments. You know, that's the way to get that sequence working, or that tie, because they are tied, they are connected.
I was just curious. It's awkward.
I will entertain a motion to extend the meeting past 9 o'clock.
I'll make that motion.
Motion made by Commissioner Demarest to extend the meeting past 9 o'clock. Do I hear a second?
No, I can't.
But I would.
Seconded by Commissioner Rodland. Any discussion?
I would rather not stay, but I'll stay if I'm the decision to form.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Somebody's got to oppose.
One dissent.
But I'll stay.
Okay. Anything else on the land use element? Commissioner Sherwood.
Just two quick things. I wonder if it might help to put a small map in the roundabout section, if you feel that would clarify it. The second thing is that I don't want Commissioner Demarest's implication concerning East Monroe to stand without some comment. It is not really true that there is an adequate amount of land absent the presence of East Monroe, assuming it was zoned rezoned to general commercial, because its size makes it unique. Therefore, most of the vacant commercial land in the city is either not on Route 2 or is much smaller. So I don't know if it needs clarification in what's written in the land use element, but I just wanted to make that comment.
Good point. Okay. Commissioner Jensen, on LEU 4. On what? On LEU 4, under the rural and urban dichotomy, it mentions that including the SR 522 widening project to be completed in 2014. And while what they're currently building will be done in 2014, the widening project is not done. Phases 3 and 4 have not yet been started. And the work we did on them is, from what I understand, expired, and they will have to redo the EISs and such to even start these.
We can make reference to the current widening project and, you know, know where it ends, and also that the, I believe it has been, I don't want to say funded or included in the improvements plan for the interchange at
Lake Nava. Paradise Lake Nava.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. And second, on LU 43, under the policies for limited open space, it defines criteria for why a region might be zoned as limited open space. And under 1B, it's talking about one of the reasons is it's so severely impacted by critical areas, including frequently flooded areas, steep slopes, or wetlands, that development is impractical. I would like to know if it would be appropriate to add, or to add a couple of adjectives to that impractical, specifically to say that development is physically and or financially impractical. Because it might be physically, yes, you can do it, but if it costs $20 million, is it, you know, is that considered practical enough that one might decide to keep something limited open space?
Actually, that impractical word bothers me. Because that implies economics. I'm not sure that's the right word.
Yeah, we shouldn't be making judgment call.
I'm not sure if it's, you know, if it's difficult or...
Well, maybe the word is the one that's wrong. Maybe it could be instead of is or something. It would take out the, some of that judgment.
Depends on what your definition of is.
I'm just ready for a new word for impractical. You change that phrase somehow.
Unlight's a good call.
But if there's something that needs to be put in there under this definition, mm-hmm. would it be appropriate to include physical as well as financial?
Not financial. Probably better say like just environmental impacts. Which is what it's describing, but financial impacts, only financial impacts that, only financial issues that may impact the city as a public.
Oh, okay. Right.
I know it's a little hard to predict,
right.
But not the private practicality of
development.
Okay.
Anything else, Commissioner Jensen?
No.
Want to take a 5-minute break?
Yes.
And then come back and maybe we can pound out this housing element.
Are we done with this?
So what?
Are we done with language?
I think so, yeah. Hopefully. For tonight.
Some good info.
Hey, let's go to the grocery store. The dollar store.
Yeah. Okay. We're back to work. We're going to review the housing element and through this.
Which one, clean or revised?
Revised.
Okay.
Yeah, I went through the clean text revised one.
So I guess the question wasn't clean or revised, it was clean or redlined. We're deciding on clean.
Clean text through.
On page two?
Are you in the, which version, housing?
On page two, yes.
Redline?
No, that'd be for clean, I thought.
I have a clean copy in front of me.
The clean.
Hopefully.
That's what I have.
Yep.
Okay. Let me grab one. And that one right here.
Page two. Third paragraph down, the first sentence is just needs to be tweaked because it's nonsensical. The growth in demand and construction of additional housing generally leads to increased commercial and industrial activity. So just so that sentence makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
There's a number of places, Paul, also where things run together, and I don't know if that's just the way it printed out for me, but I'm not even gonna, I'm sure that will get picked up in the final edit.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I had the time to go back through the clean version and clean up, do the spelling and grammar check and the things like fragmented, nonsensical phrases.
Okay. In H03, can I
have some on H03?
I'm done.
Can we finish H02?
Absolutely.
Okay, in the last paragraph, housing units by type density tenure. The table in each one there, it says 5557 there. It's actually 5577. I added it three times and it came out 5577.
Okay.
That's what it says. The table is correct. 5577
in the text.
In the text.
Good.
And then 28% is run together on that same paragraph. So. That was another comment I had. Throughout the document, sometimes you use percent. The word percent, and sometimes use the percent symbol. I would pick the symbol, probably, and stick with that, and then.
Okay. As long as we're consistent.
Okay. That's all I had.
H03, housing tenure as shown in table H2 is defines occupation. That's not a sentence. Just needs to
take the is.
I think the is no longer needed.
Okay.
Defines. Okay.
And then the next sentence, in 2011, 5164 occupied housing units, probably needs a verb.
The next recall.
Yeah, there's bound to be a bunch of these things in here. I should not have given you a clean word. But this is helpful.
That's all I have.
Okay.
That's great.
All right. Anything else on 3? H04?
Yeah. This little paragraph under aging condition housing stock talks about the general quality of the housing is relatively high, as these units were built in accordance with up-to-date building codes and are recovering the values lost over the last several years. I'm not sure what values lost has to do with general quality of the housing.
Guess I'm not even.
Anything else on 4? 805?
I was trying to make sense of the paragraph, person's second paragraph on 4.
Okay.
From 2005 to 2011, only 320 units, 5.7% were built, and nearly all units built before. That sentence might need a little.
That needs to be as little, maybe split up.
Sniffing.
Or reworded a little bit.
Right.
So he's trying to say 320 units were built in that 2-year period, compared to 3,086 units built between 1990 and 2005.
Whatever you want to say.
Right. I need some clarification.
Yeah.
Clear. Basically, things came to a halt in 2006, 2007.
Nothing else.
Okay.
Okay, page 05.
I was wondering in the table H4, if we could put in 2013 to date, Paul, just to show that things are, the times they are changing.
We can add that.
Just to show, it may be indicative.
And just put a note that the bond, you know, occurred through
such and such.
October,
yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, okay.
Thanks.
I also had one other comment, which may be silly, I don't know. But in the paragraphs, it talks about single-family detached in table H4. But it just says single-family in the table. And I was wondering if it would, if you make the table representative
consistent.
The text says. So if you just add detached in there, maybe... Make it more clear.
The column on table H4, I don't understand why it says total 2000 to 2012. That's not what that column is. It's just a total of what our year is across. In H4.
Yeah,
so I think the heading is just wrong. It should just be total.
Total, yes.
Or annual total or something like that.
Anything else on file? H06? H07? I had a couple things. In the household income, we got where it says median household income was $50,390 not too many dollar signs there. Not a big deal, but spell checker wouldn't catch that. And then in the table H7, shouldn't the 81,000, this is the last row down. Or a high income.
Oh. Yeah, the number needs to shift down.
And put the greater than prior to the number, greater than 81,000.
Okay. After a 35% increase over 10 years under household income, that probably want to just put a separate paragraph.
Yeah.
Between the table age 14.
Yes, I noticed that.
And then I had one other comment, and I'd like the other commissioners to comment on this also. The paragraph after table age 7, that whole paragraph, I was wondering, do we really need to put that paragraph in there, since the table already says exactly what that paragraph says. So you're just repeating what
that's redundant.
Yes. Yeah.
If there should be anything there, it should be some, you know, is there some observation or comment on what those percentages are? I mean, what does that mean? Why am I telling you this? And does it have any meaning?
Right, so that's what I'm saying. Other than just, do we really need that paragraph at all?
Okay.
But there should be some explanation on the table there.
Yeah. The table is kind of self-explanatory, really.
It is.
Falls household income. Is it table H14 or is it table H7?
It's H7.
Text refers to table H14.
Oops. Oh, up above it. Uh-huh. It shows federal department table income classifications. Well, that's, is that the income classifications or is H14 showing?
There's no H14. Not even close.
This would be the, need to change the word a little bit so that the table title matches the table, the text in the sentence.
Right.
It is based on, this is HUD's categories by income category.
So that's supposed to be table H7?
Yes.
Shows Federal Department of Housing?
Right.
Okay. So there's your explanation of what the table is.
Well, now I'm getting confused because that paragraph that we agree is going to go away says that we're talking about Monroe households, but this table's talking about Snohomish County households.
Right.
So what are we talking about, Monroe or Snohomish County?
Okay. We have a mismatch here. There was probably an older table in here that had county categories, but this should be referring to table H7 as, well, the table is Snohomish County categories, but it's, okay, I see the problem here.
But are the numbers Snohomish County or Monroe?
The numbers are Monroe, not Snohomish County.
Okay.
So, the paragraph H14 shows Federal Department of Housing and Urban Income classifications for Monroe.
Table H7 shows households in Monroe by, you know, HUD categories, or something to that effect.
Okay.
That what the table is showing is that the in Monroe, the HUD categories are broken out according to these kinds of, this is the spread of all the income categories. So I'll fix it.
Okay. Anything else on 7?
This kind of stuff is pretty easy. I really appreciate the input because it's going to save me some time on fixing this thing.
8?
7 or 8,
yeah.
The number of cost burden, I assume the household should be inserted there, increased significantly. And then there's no table number at the end of the sentence.
Right, should be table 8.
Oh, I see.
I have a comment on that same paragraph. Since we have most of our figures taken to one decimal point, you have the housing cost, which increased to 47% in 2011. It's 47.3%. We're going to carry it out one decimal point to be consistent.
Oh, I see. I think we don't need decimal points.
All right, then take them off to the other places too.
I think that's getting too.
Okay.
My former business partner would
criticizing you for that statement. This is not an engineering document.
And then just because I am who I am, on the AMI, the last paragraph talks about AMI, average median income. I think we should capitalize average.
Yes, we should.
That's all I had on
it. It ends with table H6, and I think that's going to change when you get to the next page. Because you can't have another table H6.
Page 09.
Oh, wait a second. The H6 ends wrong in that last.
Well, I think he's got two H6s.
Because it doesn't make sense to refer back to the household by type.
Oh, I think that's supposed to be H9.
It should be H9.
And so both that paragraph and the table need to change.
And this is the next one. Well, the table numbers are all messed up here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The next table you have. Also.
Yeah. There's no H19 either.
Let me know when you're ready, Paul.
I'm ready. We'll go through the whole document for consistent table and text titles and references.
Renumber the table.
H09. Table H6, I'm assuming that's not correct, but in the title, do we put a hyphen or the word two in between low and moderate? In the title there?
Oh, I see.
Low to moderate versus low moderate?
Or just dash, because down in the text field it's got a lot of low dash moderates.
Low dash.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Either way, I would accept either way. And then on the paragraph following that table, I wrote that I don't understand. Well, actually, the table itself, I wrote, I don't understand this table. Trying to go through and understand what the table was trying to tell me. If I look at the titles to each column, total rental units, that I can understand, but when it gets to 51 to 80% units, AMI units percentage, and then 31 to 50, 30. I'm not entirely sure what this table is trying to relay to me. So I just wrote down, I don't understand this table at all.
Okay.
If you could explain it to me, I'd appreciate it. Yeah, no idea.
Affordability, he's talking about affordability.
Yeah.
And I have to think about this.
The lower you go on the scale, the less units are available. That's the long and short of this table.
Total units.
That's what I was hoping that would tell me, but I didn't understand the figures that were in here. Personally, I just.
Of the total rental units, if I interpret this correctly, 38% were affordable to 51 to 80% of the average income category.
The lower income you are, the less choices you're going to have for a house.
Right.
Or a place to live.
Only 12% of the units were considered affordable.
But I think, I think the table made it confusing.
It could use a little explanation.
Maybe you could take these headings, make a separate, like a bullet list or a definition list of what that means, or put some of their heading up there and then tell us down below this heading means. It's 51 to 80%.
It doesn't make any sense to me. I didn't understand what.
You know, a lot of words if you need to.
Well, it's 50 to 80%.
So you can keep concise words up here and then down here.
Not
saying this would be affordable.
Did that make sense?
Yes, I think it makes sense. I got that.
This is going to make sense.
Okay.
Basically, it deserves a better indication and explanation.
Thank you.
For
thank
the situation.
You. I don't feel.
And Paul, include in that effort the paragraph below the table.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it gets worse.
The 2000 should be 2011. That the last sentence there.
Well, that would be the easy part to fix.
Yeah. I just wanted to point that out.
Oh.
And then the table number, of course, there's no 19.
I was thinking more of the middle line in that paragraph.
Yeah. Well, that's why I was trying to read that paragraph, and that's why I said the paragraph, but then I said, no, it was the whole thing. Because I tried reading the paragraph to see if it explained it for me, and it...
Yeah, the middle sentence in that.
You know, so...
Middle sentence in that paragraph is not quite reading
right. It's like grabbing on to a twig when you're sinking in quicksand.
I'll assign part of the blame for whoever wrote this and part of the blame to the guy that should have caught it.
Yeah.
In this round. That would be me.
Yeah, I think that after that sentence, table H10, there just needs to be separation there because we're moving on, right? The sentence above explains table 9, whereas after that you move on to table 10. And there's just no separation there.
Right.
It gets lost in there. Yeah.
And we really do have 32 places in the row that you can rent for less than $200 a month.
I found that surprising.
Wow. Really? Well, it doesn't tell you how big they are.
It's a hotel. It must be part of the hotel.
I'm not sure some of these are
grandma's basement.
Probably single rooms or
still a single room.
Part of the garage.
$600 or $700.
Anything else on 9? 10?
10.
All right. I'm going to skip down to the paragraph housing resources. The first sentence needs rewording. I think I understand what it's trying to say, but it's poorly stated.
Yes, it is.
And then the third sentence is under Section 8 of the Act. We don't say what the Act is anywhere before there.
Okay.
So under Section 8 of the program.
Whichever program, yeah.
The one you mentioned in the second sentence.
Right.
Federal Section 8 program, right.
And then I understand, it says within Section 8 are a variety of activities, the largest of which is the voucher program. I don't understand what that has to do with anything.
That would have a direct influence on accessing affordable housing via the voucher program.
Okay, so there should be some explanation of what the voucher program is, otherwise it's irrelevant. And then, I don't know why the voucher program is more relevant than the other variety of activities. I don't know if you need to list them all, or... it wasn't very explanative.
Okay.
Are you suggesting you need a list?
Well, I mean...
To avoid the confusion and figure out what it is. So I'm not sure what you're...
It might expand on it just a bit.
Yeah. And with a variety of activities, or they have a variety of programs, or I don't know.
Some may by listing like three or four, if they're self-explanatory and how they're, you know, program A, if that's self-explanatory.
Well, because also what we're saying is the largest of the activities is the voucher program, and I don't know how the voucher program is an activity.
Yeah, it's more of a program, not an activity.
Yeah, so maybe it's just that word that makes it awkward.
I think activities is the wrong word.
Yeah, I do too.
It implies activity.
Swing sets and
program is different.
Rooms.
Social Security is not an activity, it's a program. Vouchers are
That was the gist. That whole paragraph was kind of a mess to me.
You see, yes. Commissioner Demarest?
I'm looking at the end of the paragraph on the top of page 10, which requires back into page 9. I think all that paragraph in particular starts with the historically low interest rates. At the bottom of page 9, turnover on 10 needs to be revisited, cleaned up, and they're probably missing this period after mortgage payments, where it goes on to say table H8 illustrates single-family home residential values. It's kind of a wandering
sentence.
Right. And I'm going to ask the same question on this that I asked when we first looked at it. I did not know that we had 12 homes in Monroe that were worth $1 million or more. Nor that we have 96 homes worth $500,000 or more. And the question I had last time we talked about this is, are we talking about assessed values? Where is this data coming from? It says the American Community Survey, but is that them picking up the phone and calling a household and saying, how much is your house worth?
I did, I think I forgot to bring that up last time, but I did check on the, what is that value, and I will define it in the text, but it is based on market value, not assessed value, based on...
Does it include land?
Yes.
And so if the house is on an acre, maybe it is worth $1 million.
And so if it's market value, how are we determining market value?
The sold, you know, I guess the... What's the question? The... for houses that have sold within the past year or so, recently, then certainly it's an easy question to answer.
I can't find any 12 million dollar houses in the last 5 years.
And this would be inside the city limits.
It would be.
Yeah.
And I can't find any 96, $500,000 homes that have sold in the last decade in Monroe. Hmm.
Must be some problems with the ACS data.
Well, something's missing here. I don't know how we could base it on anything but assess values if we can talk about the value of owner-occupied housing in a given year.
Maybe they're using
Zillow. That's right.
Maybe so.
You could a finite number, a very small number, those that have sold.
Well, yeah, you know,
but
maybe.
That leaves, what, 95% of the houses that...
Well, the one across the street.
Some others.
Yeah,
so we'll have to revisit.
$300,000.
It was 1.6.
So this table's, I think, sadly out of balance, Paul.
Seems like it.
Also, one other comment I have on that table is down at the bottom of the table it says median dollars, which has really nothing to do with that table. If you want to have that, shouldn't that like be a footnote to that table rather than part of the table?
Okay.
But what it's trying to do is come up with a median price range.
Well, I understand that, but it's in the column of number of units. So, you know, it really adds a confusion.
That seems high based on the, you know, I mean, being pushed up by the majority of between 200 and 500.
Yeah.
Large majority, what, 70, almost 80%.
Well, I don't mind it being there. It's just that I'm not in there.
Right. It's out of place.
Okay. Anything else on 10?
I'll see what I can find out about that a little bit more.
Yeah, it's the 11?
11. The first paragraph below table was labeled H9. This seems to be different than I've seen elsewhere. It says residents of project-based units such as the ones listed above. Usually wouldn't that say listed in table H whatever?
Yes.
And so,
yes. That's right. Good catch. That should always mention the table.
Correct.
Commissioner Tuttle?
Okay. So the special needs population paragraph, the first the descriptive sentence is kind of all over the place. So the special needs population includes households, it should probably say people or persons, because we use that quite a bit later. Persons living in poverty, elderly persons, I guess the elderly is okay, persons with disabilities, persons with severe mental illness, and persons with alcohol and drug addictions. Just to clean that up a little bit.
Makes more sense.
Yeah, that was the 15%. Major grammatical issue that I saw.
Just out of curiosity, since we point out that it's almost 15% of total city population, how does that compare to, say, the Snohomish County population? Do we have any basis for comparison?
We should, yes.
Otherwise, it doesn't mean a whole lot, does it? Are we normal or are we abnormal?
Right. We have data for, we should have data for all of the jurisdictions and the county as a whole. I'll have to bring a copy of that table with all the other jurisdictions so we can see how Monroe compares. Be curious to see what like cities, like say, you know, like Stevens, but like population versus someplace like Everett. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Commissioner Tolt, did you have anything?
No, that was a major grammar issue.
I have something on a question on population and demographics paragraph, first paragraph. The Snohomish County population increased 17.7% and the city of Monroe increased 25%. I'm assuming that includes the prison population?
It does. Since that was started to be counted, I think, in 1996.
Because that was right in that time, 2006, I think it was.
But these no, it was 1996 when they added.
I think it was 96. 96. It's in the land use element. But, yeah, it was 96.
Because this range is only from 2000 to 2010.
I could note that that does include the...
It automatically includes it, but the percentage growth isn't included because it was already there in 2000.
Well, that was my question,
right.
Was the percentage of growth, you know, if that includes, you know, any growth in the population at the prison.
It would.
Yeah.
Although this has been a
fairly
steady total, I guess. They're probably at capacity, maybe above capacity.
Well, I'll leave that up to you whether you want
to. I see there's a font size problem here, too. And actually, I think this may need to be put into one paragraph instead of two short paragraphs.
Okay. Anything else on?
Yeah, one more on 11.
11?
Or on 11. Or did I skip down?
We're still on 11.
We're still on.
Yeah, one more thing. Do you have to call on me?
Commissioner Tuttle.
Oh, thank you. Affordable housing refers to households earning less than 95. Should that say low to moderate income households refers to households earning less than? Is it, affordable housing is talking about the actual structure, right?
Yes.
And this sentence is talking about the people who would live in the structure.
That needs to be clarified. What it's trying to say is that people in
low to moderate income.
In low to moderate income households.
Refers to. Yeah.
Are earning less than 95%.
They need affordable housing. They're not the affordable housing.
That needs to be fixed.
Good. Anything else on 11? H.O. 12. I have one comment on housing, households living in poverty. Yeah, could we add to that list? Or should we add to that list
job seeking assistance program or something to that effect. You know, you got places for them to sleep and houses and children, but, you know, do we do any kind of assistance to help them find work?
Well, this is talking about housing.
Yeah, households.
I know transitional housing.
Is it housing or households?
Actually, housing and services.
It's... Okay, it's households. I know transitional housing, by definition, includes counseling and job training and so forth. That could be brought out in that item. Or should it be? It's not related to housing, but it's certainly related to their ability to get beyond transitional housing.
Well, what brought that out is, you know, you have linkage to services for children, you have daycare for preschool, and that really doesn't have anything to do with housing.
Yeah, it's really talking about social services.
Job assistance, that type of thing. So that's why I brought it up.
Okay.
Commissioner Demarest?
On that same issue, we talk about the elderly, we talk about persons with disabilities, we talk about persons with severe mental illness. We're talking about people, except for the first one, where we're talking about households living in poverty. Aren't we really talking about individuals and families living in poverty?
Yes.
Yeah. That's what it says.
No, it doesn't. It says households.
Yeah, and in parentheses, individual.
It's not the same thing.
Okay.
I don't think it's the same.
Persons living in poverty.
It's persons living in poverty.
Yeah.
Individuals and families.
Right.
Good things.
Should families be capitalized like individuals?
Yes. And it should be persons with alcohol and drug addictions.
Right.
More consistency.
Commissioner Tuttle.
Then my question is about the special needs housing and services. Why are we talking about services?
It's related to the housing in terms of those services are provided typically, I guess, or desired to be provided with the special housing.
So we say that their help with paying bills, shopping, nutritious meals, transportation, and medical appointments.
So it's qualifying social services.
We're qualifying adequate housing. What we're trying to do everything.
What does paying bills have to do with qualifying adequate housing?
Well, that there's infrastructure in place to make sure their bills get paid. Oh no, Bridget. Instruction.
I thought it was about the housing.
Yeah.
Because then below, when we're bulleting, we're saying shelters, transitional housing. If we're going to say all those other things, then I think we should list the other services.
Well, that's a really good point. Maybe a lot of this stuff shouldn't even be in this. If it's,
well, I just think that last sentence
have to do with housing.
Those are some of the needs of the special needs of those people, but
they're not
strictly related to
housing.
It's in social services. That's the services thing.
So is it just a matter then of identifying what the special needs groups might be?
I think it's either adding bullets or deleting that last sentence in the description and taking "and services" out. Because special needs housing it definitely has its own requirements. And we list those things there. I don't know if daycare is part of housing.
As you go down the list, like under elderly, supportive services to permit them to receive in-home care.
Yeah, then maybe we need to list transportation and...
Yeah, it gets to be a...
We just have to decide if we're talking about just housing or we're talking about both housing and services, and one way or the other, it needs to be consistent.
What if we in the, I'm just thinking of something here, in the last sentence in the special needs housing paragraph, if we refer to also, many of these groups also require supportive services, including help me build blah, 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 job training, blah, blah, but then we take out referrals to those things in the list.
Yeah, it just depends on what we're trying to describe. If we are, in fact, trying to describe services, then we need to have more complete bullets.
Right.
Or have a separate section that, along with the housing requirements for the special needs, we also have these services for the special needs. Yeah.
Then that begs the question of where those services should be acknowledged and somehow plan for to be provided. Where does that happen?
Does it need to be in this document?
The housing element. To me, the housing element says handicap accessible, or whatever the PC right. term is now. You know, proximity to downtown and different facilities and activities for people that have needs. You know, there are physical components to be considered in the special needs housing field. I'm not sure that any of the services that don't have to do with the physical structure of the house need to be in this element, in this document, but that's just, I'm not sure.
Under alcohol and other things, it's case management and detoxification. Then lastly, it's housing such as group homes or effort homes.
I'm wondering if part of what this document, what this section is trying to outline is, if we're planning, or, you know, a developer comes along and says, I'm going to build some housing, well, we have to include special needs or low-income housing. And it's just helping to outline that housing that is for this classification of persons, you need to also be planning for adequate daycare or adequate transportation.
Does the developer have to be the one who's planning for that?
I'm not sure if it would be the developer or if it would just be part of the process of getting the permits. If in that process, this list has been looked at and say, did you address this and this and this? I worry if we simplify this too much, are we going to... You know,
I just don't think you can say someone has to make sure that there's going to be daycare.
Commissioner Demarest?
I'm listening to the discussion and wondering what this 7 or 8 inches of text here accomplishes or contributes to this document.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, perhaps a paragraph saying, acknowledging that there are special needs in the community that include the following types of situations, and but even that, what does it accomplish? Where does it take us? There's no data associated with it. There's no targets. There's no objectives. What's it accomplish?
If anything, then almost needs, if it was in there, it should be following the paragraph on the previous page 11.
You could condense all of these instead of having the elderly, persons with disabilities, persons, instead of having that all broken up. You could just call that special needs and identify some. I mean, I don't have a problem with physically accessible units, even affordable housing.
Paul, I think your comment about the previous page answers the question we're having. The special needs populations on page 11 says everything we're trying to say in that 7 or 8 inches on page 12.
Yes.
And we can stop.
And I think that's the end.
Yeah.
And we can just...
Yeah.
Eating.
There isn't some other state or federal law that mandates we have some of this detail in there, is there?
No, the Department of Commerce has a checklist, a suggested checklist for housing element. And I checked 3 or 4 other housing elements, and they're all over the board.
Okay.
Some are, you know, a few pages, some are like 30 pages.
Yeah, and some of these bullet points are actually could fall under adequate housing, you know, the accessibility and stuff like that. So and that's what I was saying. We either need to add to it or take it away. But
I think we simplify.
Anything else on 12?
Yeah, simplify.
13?
Oh, 13. Just curious, on the third paragraph, it says the West Main.
Oh.
It's the, what do you know, corridor or something, street, whatever.
West Main Street.
Up in the first, you said the West Main Corridor, so maybe you mean
okay.
The
corridor. Yeah, corridor. West Main Street Corridor. West Main Street.
Up here.
That sounds kind of
street up there. So.
14. I have one comment on housing strategies. First list item. It says identify areas within the city that can be upzoned. That's a new term for me. I didn't understand that word. I suggest maybe rezoned to allow for greater densities.
And
then we can do away with the second sentence.
It's the opposite of downzoned.
Is it?
It is.
Downzoned?
Yeah, it is a word. I'm not sure.
It is a word?
Upzoned, downzoned.
Well, that's the first time
but
I've tried.
I like rezone to allow for greater densities.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the second sentence could be deleted.
Go away.
Well, the second sentence to point out two approaches, both a rezone or an overlay zone.
Yeah, but rezone is rezone.
Right, but it's an overlay zone. What is that? Is that something different than a rezone?
It's an added layer.
Yeah.
The underlying zoning doesn't change, but it's an added zoning.
We've kind of moved away from that approach, haven't we, Paul, in this city?
We don't.
Last year, the airport overlay. Mel Gardens was an overlay, I believe, through a contract planning site plan.
Was it?
Yeah. I think it was felt it was too much like a spot zone.
I think simplifying is to rezone. I'm not sure that overlay zoning is appropriate for, in this case. If you're going to try and increase the density, you're going to do it by way of base zoning, not an overlay. An overlay might be something that applies design standards or something like that.
Okay, anything else on 14?
Yeah, paragraph 2 on the conclusions. The statement is the amount of developable land, potential extent of required mitigation for development within the Monroe GA renders that area a limited resource. And I'm trying to figure out what that means. What that says to me is we have so much population now, we're going to add 8,000 people circa in the next 20 years. And we're saying we have all this land where we can put them, and this statement says, maybe not to me, that the UGA is perhaps not an adequate resource to accommodate the population projections. So I'm just trying to figure out what is being said in point number 2.
The whole
strange sentence.
The whole, actually, every single one of those numbers is a problem because we're saying that these are factors that will influence housing within Monroe, and then we're writing these descriptive sentences that aren't. We need to identify what the factor is that they're trying to say there, which is what you're getting at in number 2. But the rest of them have the same issues that you're pointing out in number 2. For instance, number 1, the factor should be the increased need for housing, not that whole entire sentence. And number 2 should be mitigating development within the UGA.
Right, and next they should be bullets.
Number three should be construction costs. You know what I mean? Those are, these sentences are not factors.
Should be bulleted fragments.
Right. I didn't mean to hijack your thing, but they all have the same issue that you're pointing out in number two.
Well, you didn't hijack because you was saying pretty much the same thing. The sentence didn't belong.
In any case, just so that we're clear and concise what we want to say here.
Yeah. Let me work on that whole section and so that they make sense. That second sentence is a very strange sentence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then in the second to last bullet point, this is more philosophical issue. Consider inclusionary zoning that requires a single development project to include housing for a variety of income levels. That may be illegal, immoral, and unethical. To require,
I think require is a tough word there.
Something like, but I don't know that you can require. I mean, I've seen codes that do it, but I don't know if it's legal or constitutional to tell people what they can do with their property.
We've done it through the PRD process. But then also they're doing the PRD process as a matter of choice to get something extra.
Right.
We're saying you can have that extra if you include such and such.
So you can encourage it.
It should be.
That's a requirement there on the PRD.
Yeah, but you're encouraging it by.
It's the carrot and stick.
Yeah.
You're encouraging it by allowing the possibility of the PRD in the first place.
More units. But I don't know that it's zoning per se, is it?
Which one is that?
Second from the bottom,
second from the bottom. I don't know that it's not zoning so much as it is seamless affordable housing, and I don't know that we should be saying a single development project.
That's so, the development regulations, isn't it? Rather than the zoning.
Yeah, in some communities it is a across the board regulation of like 10%. Affordable housing, however that's defined.
Isn't that requirement within the all the PRDs anyway? They have to have
it. It is. It's one of the development regulations of the PRDs.
So why don't we say encourage PRDs?
Well, we do want to vote that.
Then maybe it's redundant.
Yeah.
Another word that's in there that I'm not sure it should be there is the word consider. Consider right. Inclusionary zoning that required. Now you're considering requiring something.
Well, there's a strategy, we so I can see.
It. Well, I know it's a strategy, but then I don't think the word consider.
Well, you have identify, establish, pursue, and then consider and encourage are kind of soft.
Yeah.
If this is taken to an extreme, then you create a development where people who, it's the old thing, you go down a row of mansions and someone's got a shack.
That's
nice. And they hate the shack because it devalues their properties. And so you set that particular project up for failure in that sense. By requiring certain types of housing. And fine, they'll build those, and they'll probably be occupied. But people will be reticent to occupy the higher priced housing within that type of development if there's not some sort of separation. That's just human nature.
Yeah. It really works when there's a mix of housing types so that they are seamless. That you can't say this is an affordable house and this one is not, but obviously you can't mix a unit A with a unit D in terms of scale and size with the mansion thing. But that's
how the infamous Ken Berry became a gazillionaire, is he would
by large acreages. Certain housing here, 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 here will be compartmentalized.
Yeah. That's Euclidean zoning.
I don't know what to say.
What if we said encourage development to include housing for a variety of income levels? And drop the inclusionary zoning and requiring a single development project in this, or encourage development.
Do we require that now of builders to do that?
No.
That's not a strategy.
Exactly. All of those soft words don't really belong in a strategic plan.
Because the last one is encourage conversion, reuse.
Establish and identify are clear-cut words that require action. The other ones don't.
So it's a combination of policy language and more regulatory language.
You could say establish zoning now.
We do have incentives for affordable housing in our code currently.
That's not a zoning thing, though. That's not development.
It's not zoning, it's development, yeah, building development units.
Well, I think the PRDs themselves encourage exactly what we're talking about there.
It's best just to take this bullet point and help. If it's that hard to rewrite, then maybe it doesn't need to be there.
And number three does kind of address number four. Right income levels, creation of affordable housing units. Yeah, let's take it out. But on the last one, do we somehow provide incentives for conversion and or reuse of buildings?
Well, saying provide incentives for is more strategic than encourage.
Right, encourages.
But do we have incentives for that, or is that an action that needs to be taken?
Well, it's a strategy that needs to be implemented.
Okay, cool.
The next dot also uses encourage.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that as maybe on the next page. Next page, really. Oh, encourage, pursue, and work.
We'll let you fight with that.
Commercial.
I'll look for a not so soft word, but something that's short of require.
Yeah.
It's a strategy, not a regulation. Well, pursue mixed use developments in all commercial and mixed use zones.
That's not a touch screen. Right now.
I was wiping some dust off. Do we already have density bonuses for the PRD process?
We do, yeah.
Yeah, so do we need to pursue additional ones, or can we just say provide? Why don't we say provide density bonuses?
Reduce lot size, if you need to touch on.
Where's that at?
That's the third bullet.
There's density bonuses for doing the PRD, and then there's the issue of the creation of affordable housing units as part of the PRD. You do the PRD, you can get a density bonus. The way we're set up currently, you do affordable housing units, you can get additional bonus. So we really have already done that, unless we want to try to pursue additional bonuses beyond what we already have.
Yeah, and that's what I'm asking. Do we need more bonuses? What if we just said periodically review density bonuses
through the PRD process for creation of affordable housing units?
Yeah, just say review.
Yeah, review. There's a strategy. We will review. already have.
Just simply substitute review.
Mm-hmm. Review density bonuses.
Yeah, instead of pursue additional.
I'm going to clear what we're thinking in this second bullet here.
Well, we're on the third one.
Oh, third one.
Third bullet.
Mm-hmm. Cross out pursue additional. Oh,
the
other page. There we go.
Oh, I'm on the wrong page.
Yeah, 14, third bullet.
Oh, I see.
Take out pursue no, additional and put review.
Review destiny bonuses through the blah, blah, blah. Okay.
That's a feasible thing to accomplish.
Anything else on 14? 15?
Just down the bottom, H4-P1.2, there's a G in the first line that's all alone.
Right. H-O-P-1.2.
The next sentence, to avoid concentrating housing in one area. Housing in one area or something, just a word missing that name.
In is missing. Anything else on 15? 16? I got a few on this one. HOP 1.5, that paragraph doesn't make sense to me. If you read it, it probably could be worded better. So that's why I'm suggesting you take a look at that and see if that can be rewarded. Maybe it's commas in the wrong place or something. It's just tripped over.
Need some rereading of words at the very least.
Yeah. And then the next paragraph. It starts with the word develop, and I ask a question, do we really mean develop? Develop site?
No, it's more like create site selection,
yeah.
Or implement.
Or adopt.
Adopt.
Yeah, right.
Site selection criteria.
I don't think we want to develop. and then on the goal, HO-G2, I suggest use the word regulate rather than promote. You regulate fair and equal access.
Wait, actually, the goal should be promote, but the policy should be, one of the policies should talk about regulation. But the goal should be broad and the policy should be the actions taken to reach the goal.
I think that language is probably right out of federal law, too. It looks really familiar.
Well, no wonder it's wrong.
How about provide fair and equal access?
Yeah, I just didn't like
promote.
Yeah, provide would be okay.
No, actually, the goal should be.
The goal should be general.
Fair and equal access to housing, not promote.
Just take the word out completely.
Yeah. Goals don't have
actions.
Action verbs, they have statements.
Yeah. Better yet.
So what's goal G1? Promote a variety of...
Right, so take the promote.
Take out the word goal. The goal is variety of residential densities.
Same thing with HOD3.
I think we should change all the other ones too.
Yeah. And then the policies for that goal that I just talked about. HOP 2.2, the sentence, amend the zoning ordinance to prohibit construction of housing units that prohibit children, unless that probably needs a little rewording. There's too much prohibiting going on.
Of children, especially.
Yes.
Construction of children.
Of children.
That's all I had on 16. Anybody else got comments on 16?
Well, I have the same comment as before, and I don't think we need to go through every single one of them, but the goal should be what we talked about, but the policies should be specific actions that we're going to do in order to accomplish the goal.
The goal is the end state of being, not the action to get to the goal.
Right. Well, for instance, HOP 3.3, continue to implement code enforcement programs and encourage repair and maintenance of residences, isn't really a policy. It's more of a suggestion. So there's a lot of those policies that need to be more specific and enforceable.
In that case, I think the continuum is saying that we already implemented code enforcement programs.
That's just one of them, but they all need to be looked at to actually make sure that they are helping to accomplish the goal and they're not just nice-sounding, flowery sentences.
Okay, 3.3 is probably supposed to be 3.2. Unless there's something that
we might have deleted. We might have deleted one.
I think we did.
And any more on 16? HO 17?
Same comment.
I have nothing on 17. Commissioners, anything else on that?
17 HO 5.2 should be P 5.2.
Well, I think we reached our limit tonight. Well, we still have the economic development comment.
That has not changed.
No. I think Jeff needs to be here too.
I have a pretty much a commitment that it's going to be done well ahead of the next meeting, which is not very far away. There will be a revised element coming out.
Commissioner Demers, do you have some?
Thank you. It seems that on the land use, there's still quite a bit of work to do, as well as obviously the economic development. Are we going to get it all done in one more work session before the hearing? That's what we have scheduled.
I believe so. And then we'll have a hearing.
Hearing's on the 11th.
Recommendation on the 25th. We really need to have the elements pretty much completed or very close at the 28th meeting to carry to the public hearing.
And which is next week.
Make some changes
next
there.
That's next Monday.
Yeah. Boy, it's tight.
We do have another Monday between that and the public hearing, the 4th.
Next week,
we're
not to exercise
that. Yeah, we probably should take a look and see where we are next Monday.
If we don't exercise the 4th and we run out of time, we have time to push back the public hearing to the 18th.
No, we can't because it requires notification.
That's what I'm saying. If that's something we decided tonight, there would be time.
We have to advertise the public hearing almost 3 weeks ahead of time in the paper.
I think
as I say, if we felt we had to make the public hearing the 18th, we could make that decision tonight and there would be the notification time to do so. But if we wait until next week, we don't even have that option.
We could convene the meeting on the 11th always and continue it to the 18th if necessary without further public notice. Right, Paul?
We can do that, yes. In fact, for this meeting, we didn't have time to publish the agenda in the papers. We posted it on the web, posted it here at the library and so forth. We don't have to publish an agenda in the paper. We do, but it's not required in the same way as a public hearing.
The other question I have is how do we want to handle the actual document? Are we leaning one way or the other? We're going to read both and try to come to a consensus next week as to which way we're going to go. Chairman?
I'm saying that we come together and we make a determination at that time as to do we want to go with the recommendations from Commissioner Sherwood, or do we want to fall back on what we already have and go through that?
So in light of that, would you suggest that we mark up both renderings?
I would, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which would be my inclination.
Yeah, I would.
Sorry,
I'm
done.
Yeah. Mark both of them off already.
Okay.
And I had started to go through the natural environment section myself. Actually, I did make some edits before the last meeting, and one of them I could make more. But then when Commissioner Sherwood volunteered, I stopped doing that and did on other things.
Good idea.
Mr. Chair, was glacial fluvial one of the words that you were wondering about?
I tell you, there were so many in here.
I could be able to mark it up. I would be going like that.
I wanted to say you misspelled a few things, but I think you didn't.
Yeah. One thing that was in, Los, L-O-E-S-S, is that
correct? Yeah, I saw that too.
That's one lone source.
I know I don't have any of that in my yard. Yeah.
The Lus Hills in western Iowa were two places in the globe where there are this Lus Hills formation. The other one is Cheddar's. Soil scientists love to use words like alluvial.
And the Palouse is.
Okay, so for tonight, I'm going to. I think unless we have by popular demand to have discussion by commissioners and staff, I'm going to suggest I take a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
I second.
Motion made by Commissioner Jensen for adjournment and seconded by Commissioner Durson. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried.